Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Dealing with unwanted tattoos today on Advanced. Hello, listeners, and welcome back to another Advanced Studio Classroom. My name is Simon, and you are joining me today for the second part of our January Newsworthy Clips. Today, we're going to be going over an article called Medical Students Change Lives in Tattoo Removal Program. Joining me on the program today, I have my co-host, Rhonda. Hey, Rhonda.
Hey, Simon. It's good to be with you. I always enjoy being on the radio with you. I like your leadership style. I like your way of thinking. It's fun.
It's a pleasure to be of service. You ever looked at pictures of bad tattoos?
Well, I've seen a lot of tattoos. I used to be a substitute teacher. I've seen and talked to kids about tattoos. I'm very interested in why people get tattoos, but I don't have any tattoos.
Yeah. I don't have tattoos either, but I've seen many bad tattoos.
Bad tattoos as in ones that people regretted
getting? Well, I mean, there's different aspects to bad tattoo. Like, one of the things I have noticed about tattoos in my time with people with tattoos is that there's a massive difference between an expensive tattoo from a famous tattoo artist and a tattoo you get done in a shop in a back alley for a discount price. Both, you know, in terms of quality and artistry, things like that.
Sure.
So you could break it down that way. You could say like, oh, you know, this is a, you know, a tattoo that looks kind of like a photograph mm-hmm. versus this is a tattoo that looks like a child drew it with a marker, right? There's that. There's also the tattoo aging problem. Like mm-hmm. as you age, you know, your body shape sort of shifts, mm-hmm. you gain weight, you lose weight, your skin becomes less vibrant, mm-hmm. taut, if you will. And so there's tattoos that age badly. You could say that's a bad tattoo. You could also say like a tattoo that is just a bad idea. Like you tattoo the ex-girlfriend's name on your arm and then you want to get rid of it, right? So there's lots of reasons people might want to get rid of tattoos. And that's really what we're talking about today, tattoo removal. Mm-hmm. But in particular, I think we're talking about tattoo removal for people who might not normally be able to remove the tattoos.
Sure, and I like the title. It says Change Lives. So this is about people devoting their lives to the practice of medicine and finding a way early on in their training that they can have a big impact, actually change a person's life.
Yeah. I worked with a guy one time. This is a Simon story. Listen, listeners, if you don't want to hear this story, you can skip ahead 2 minutes.
I'll tell you right now, though. I'm always ready for a Simon story. In fact, I'm thinking of writing a book called Simon Stories.
One summer, I worked in a factory that built modular homes. That's kind of peripheral. You can Google that if you want to find out what that's all about. But I worked in this factory with a bunch of guys who had, they were not skilled laborers, meaning like they weren't electricians or plumbers. They were just kind of construction workers who had this factory job. And so they had mixed backgrounds. One of the guys I had I worked with had obviously had, let's call it a light criminal history. He'd been in and out of jail and spent a lot of time drinking and living a bit of a rough life. And so he had a large number of tattoos that basically had been homemade, like with ink from a pen. Are you familiar with what I'm talking about here? Like prison-style tattoos? Mm. He had one on his arm that looked like an L. And one day we were on break time. We were sort of sitting on the picnic table outside. And somebody was like, hey, Len, what's that tattoo supposed to be? And he was like, I don't know.
Oh, he wasn't aware.
I woke up with it one day. Mm. That's what he sort of said. Mm-hmm. And that is what I think about when I think about this article. Unfortunate tattoos and people mm-hmm. who are sort of like living with a tattoo that is a mistake, either because they don't know how to get it removed or they can't afford to get it removed or whatever. Because my understanding is it's sort of a plastic surgery clinic process that you would go through to have it removed. It's probably not medically necessary, so you probably have to pay for it yourself much of the time, right? Things like that. So I think there are people out there who would prefer to not have some of their tattoos. And I think we're basically looking at an article about medical students helping those people out. So it should be a good read today. We're going to do two readings, right, Rhonda?
Yes.
I think we should get into our first one. Listeners, if you have your January magazine, open it up with us now and we'll read through the first part of this article together. Let's do it.
Medical students change lives in tattoo removal program. Since she was a child, Maya Shetty knew she was going to be a doctor. She wanted to follow in the footsteps of her parents, who are both primary care physicians in West Virginia, and she wanted to use her future career to help underserved populations that oftentimes fall through the medical system's cracks. As a first-year medical student at UC San Diego, she and five classmates jumped at the opportunity to volunteer for their school's Clean Slate Free Tattoo Removal Program. The unique program at University of California, San Diego, UCSD, puts medical students in clinics as early as their first year. Shetty said medical students with her level of experience are not traditionally working directly with patients for at least a few years. The program has already taught them how to build relationships and develop skills early on in a clinical setting. While the students build their credentials, the patient, who might not have been able to afford tattoo removal, takes another step toward a better future free of cost.
Okay, so we're introduced to a medical student here, Maya Shetty. She knew she was going to be a doctor. I don't know if you knew this, Rhonda, but there was a time in my life when I thought about being a doctor.
Really? Tell us about it.
I actually completed a pre-medical program as part of my educational journey, but I decided that basically when I looked at those around me who also wanted to be doctors, they were like really committed. Like they had wanted to be doctors, you know, from the time they were young. And it was like every choice they made was geared towards, you know, like getting into medical school. Like their hobbies were hobbies that would look good on a medical school application. And I thought, well, you know, I might get in somewhere, I might manage to be a doctor, but I'm not going to be a good doctor. So I should move on to something else. But that is clearly, you know, Maya Shetty is one of those other people that I was looking at around me.
Sure. We could say ever since she was a child, but it says since she was a child, she wanted to follow in the footsteps. I like that phrase, follow in the footsteps. Follow in the footsteps of her parents. Why? Because they're both doctors. Primary care. They give the basic care, not a specialization. And in West Virginia, which is a state in the United States where there really is a lot of economic distress, a lot of social problems. It's a state known for a lot of health needs.
Wait. Quick question
here. Yes.
You know, when I was growing up, my family had a doctor.
Okay.
A GP.
And that stands for General Practitioner.
But that term evolved to family doctor.
Okay.
Is a primary care physician a family doctor?
That's my understanding. I think you're right. The terms have changed, but I'm pretty sure it's the same. General practitioner, primary care, the idea that you first go to this doctor, primary first, and then if there's a specific need where he recommends expertise, you would, I don't think we say secondary care, but primary care means that first doctor that would evaluate you. That's my understanding,
Simon. Okay, so I think you're right. But I think this is going to cause a cultural gap in understanding for many of our listeners.
Oh, tell us about that.
Well, because, you know, the medical system here allows you to basically shop for doctors. So, you know, if you're having like, you know, problems with your heart, you go to a heart doctor.
Yes.
Like you make an appointment. But that's not really possible in the States. North American, more the Western system. You go to your family doctor or your primary care, the first doctor.
Yes.
And they refer you to a specialist.
Yes.
So the way to think about these people, well, the way I've tended to think about them as I've aged, is they are like your healthcare guide or coordinator.
Yes.
In particular, like when you go to the specialist in North America, you don't get that much time. You often get test results, but those are then sent back to your family doctor.
Yes.
So the follow-up is with your family doctor because they maybe have, there's more of a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
They'll spend more time explaining to you the implications of the result, things like that. So in some ways, it's a nice system. In other ways, it kind of slows things down. But
well,
that's basically why they're using the term primary, which means first doctor. Because here, your first doctor could be any doctor you go to first.
Well, and also, and I come from a small rural area myself in a different state, but the specialists tend to be in the big cities. So part of seeing a primary care physician first is that's who's near. That's who. That's the one I can afford. If I have to see a specialist, I have to drive far, and it's going to be expensive. So Maya Shetty is really wants to help. Excuse me. It says underserved populations. I had to look at that word carefully. You see, underserved populations. In other words, these are parts of the country, especially in hilly, mountainous West Virginia, where there aren't a lot of doctors. There aren't specialists there necessarily. Those populations aren't served by as many medical options. So she wants to help underserved populations.
We can use those terms much more generally, though, than just the medical system. So basically, served refers to having received a service. And if you're underserved, it means there are not enough services to meet the need fully in your area. So we use that term with things like grocery stores. You know, they talk about food deserts. We've talked about those on the program where there's no store within easily reachable distance that sells fresh vegetables, for example.
And that's why we have this phrase, fall through the cracks.
Yeah.
Now, notice how that phrase is broken up by medical systems, cracks, but you could say fall through the cracks of business development.
Sure.
So picture us, I think of a sidewalk, any surface where there's a crack or a gap. If something falls in there, it's hard to get it out or it is forgotten.
Yeah. Well, more than that, like if you have a bowl that has cracks, small things will fall through and fall out of the bowl, but big things will not.
Okay.
So it kind of suggests people who are like less important or poorer or like less powerful or whatever. And so they are ignored and they are not
forgotten, served. Yes.
They're underserved by the broader system. So you can get that. You can use that again with anything from food to housing to government services to hydropower.
Or an idea. You know. Like I've got a pile of papers on my desk. And I'm, that project. Oh, sorry, it fell through the cracks.
Yeah.
We can see
schools,
it in a more. Yes.
You know?
Yeah, we can say it in a serious institutional way, but we could also use it, am I right, Simon, for just a task that I forgot. It's a helpful phrase. The image being there's a surface with a crack, and if something gets in there, I might not notice it again.
That's right. Okay, so Maya was a first-year medical student at UCSD. Actually, I've recently met a group of people from California. And I'm learning all kinds of things about California that I did not know before. This is apparently, I would say, this is a famous public university in California. They have lots of these UCs in California, I am told.
Yes, if you see a UC, that's University
of Berkeley,
California.
UC Berkeley, UC Davis,
then you'll
UC
see the city.
Irvine, Irving, something like that. The Canadian speaks, friends. Speaks about things he doesn't fully understand. Anyway, my understanding is UCSD, they have a medical school. Why do I understand that? Because she was a first-year student in their medical program. And she had this opportunity. She and five classmates, so six of them, jumped at an opportunity to volunteer for this clinic or program. The school has this program called Clean Slate Free Tattoo Removal, and it's a program. So it says it's a unique program at UCSD, and it puts medical students in clinics as early as their first year.
Well, let me point something out in terms of the United States here. This woman's parents practiced in West Virginia, all the way on the East Coast, very poor area. This is admirable that she's studying at in a very prosperous state, relatively, California. So we can think of even geographically here, the United States. She's come way across the United States. She's studying in San Diego, and she's excited about the opportunity to work with an underserved population in this new area that she's living in. So I find this interesting,
well,
just
I think
geographically.
They tell us in the last line here what the big advantage is. Basically, first-year students normally would not be in a setting where they're able to interact with patients.
Yes.
But what do they call it? Bedside manner is the term they tend to use, right? Which is, it basically means the way in which doctors interact with patients. And they can make it like a huge difference in the outcome of the medical treatment.
Right, so bedside manner is your
the way you relate to and talk to and interact with patients.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're developing experience with bedside manner here that they wouldn't normally have access to.
Sure.
These medical students wouldn't have access to. So, I mean, we can see from the name there, clean slate is an interesting term. A slate is kind of like a mini chalkboard that people used to use in school, and you could practice writing on it, and then you had to clean it, wipe it off
so it
was clean. And so the idea here is that when you have a clean slate now, what we mean is your past mistakes are forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
They're being erased, removed. And so
what
I would imagine from this clean slate free tattoo removal program is these are people who have regrettable tattoos. And so, you know, maybe politically sensitive topics or ideologies or, you know, things that they want removed or maybe things related to past relationships that have gone very badly or like.
Well, and let me just say again, I've lived in San Diego, and because the weather's so nice, you have a very large homeless population there.
Sure.
So any kind of free program that puts medical students in places that are in underserved populations, this is going to be a very helpful service to an urban area like San Diego where there are a lot of people trying to get their lives back together. I have a very good friend who runs a homeless program. I wonder if he knows about this, because giving medical care to people who can't afford it or whose lives have just gotten disrupted by whatever, this is a really great, having a clean slate is a really important thing for these people.
The story of the clinic here that they lay out in the remainder of our reading is basically that medical students have an incentive to participate or volunteer with the program because it gives them experience that they wouldn't normally be able to get. And that's a good thing. It helps them build their credentials. Credentials are basically your experiences and licenses and degrees and things like that. Build your resume, if you will, with patients. And then for patients, it helps them when they wouldn't normally be able to afford tattoo removal. What the phrasing they use is take another step towards a better future. Free of cost. So maybe the tattoos, we can assume they are causing emotional distress for these people. And that brings us to our second reading. Let's do it.
Historically, tattoos have not had a very positive image, said Victoria D. Ojeda, a professor at the UC San Diego School of Medicine. Some of our clients are looking to make a change in what other people may see about them. Ojeda, who runs the removal program, said people come in because their tattoos are creating boundaries, whether socially or economically. Some clients are looking for employment or to improve their financial status. Others are attempting to distance themselves from criminal organizations. They're trying to remake their lives, Ojeda said. They can also have tattoos that might not be perceived well, but they have no actual affiliation. By helping a formerly incarcerated person remove a tattoo that represents a past version of themselves, Shetty said the clinic helps remove some of the stigma they face in everyday life. She said, "The program has opened my eyes. I think everyone should have an equal opportunity at a fresh start."
Ah, yes. Here we have the controversial section right at the beginning here. Rhonda and I, during the reading, were comparing notes on the social acceptability of tattoos. And there is no doubt that since the time we were younger, in our various generations, tattoos have become much, much more socially acceptable and common. Like when I was growing up, basically criminals had tattoos, people who were very rough.
Well, yes.
Yeah. In particular, if you had visible tattoos, you basically would have had difficulty getting employment in a lot of jobs.
Well,
right?
Tattoos, now I will make the observation from the U.S. Perspective, tattoos now are often seen as decorative or cosmetic. Oh, I'm going to get a butterfly. So this is an interesting discussion. We could do a whole article just on the culture of tattoos. But what the issue here is tattoos that show that you had a certain kind of lifestyle, certain associations. So the sentence...
I mean, they basically acknowledge what we are saying here with the first line, historically. So in the past, tattoos have not had a very positive image. But... I would say that depending on the social circle you belong to, they may or may not have a more positive image now.
Right.
And in particular, the type of tattoo and how where it's located will also have an effect. So, for example, you know, if you were advising, you know, if one of my children, you know, was a little older and desperately wanted a tattoo and was determined to get a tattoo, the advice I would offer is get it in a place you can hide it.
Well, we have a number
because there's still, you know, right? But if you that failing, so there's a lot of different factors that go into tattoos socially still.
Sure, and we have a number of phrases in this article indicating someone wanting to change something or change the direction. So we have the phrase clients looking to, wanting, looking to make a change, attempting to make a change, looking to make a change in the way other people see them. We'll see the phrase coming up to distance themselves from. So a lot of phrases here talking about changing something in your life.
So effectively, tattoos send a message to other people.
Mm-hmm.
And it might not always be the message you want to send.
Mm-hmm.
And so you may feel there's a need to change your tattoo so you can change the message you are sending for whatever reason. I think that's essentially what they're saying here, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so then we're introduced to the person who runs the program. And what we're told is that people come in because their tattoos are creating boundaries, whether socially or economically. So socially there, it would be, you know, like they're getting resistance from people who are not as accepting as they would be if they didn't have the tattoo. And economically, maybe they're finding difficulty getting employment because of the tattoos.
Do you notice that they use the word clients? This is a medical clinic, but it doesn't say patients. And I think we can understand the word clients because these are not people with a health problem. It's a social need they have. Is that why they say clients instead of patients?
My understanding is that that is an increasingly popular term throughout the medical establishment. But I didn't even notice it there, to be honest.
Yeah, I did. So, I noticed twice she says some of our clients.
Well done. Yeah. So then we come to that phrase you mentioned. They're attempting to distance themselves from criminal organizations. So some tattoos are connected to gangs. And that will be something that is more familiar to many of our listeners because they'll know about things like Japan, where tattoos are still very frowned upon because they're seen as being criminal sort of things, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so our listeners will be familiar with this idea. They're trying to remake their lives, we're told. They can also have tattoos that might not be perceived well, but they have no actual affiliation. So for whatever reason...
Yeah, it doesn't mean a membership. An affiliation is a membership.
Yeah. So we were talking about, you know, we mentioned there are a range of bad tattoos, right? tattoos that are bad for different reasons. Mm-hmm. And that's basically what we're talking about here. So what are they doing? Well, they give an example. By helping a formerly incarcerated person. What's an incarcerated person, Rhonda?
Someone who has been put in prison, incarcerated in prison.
So in the U.S., they have different terms. They have jails and they have prisons, and they're actually different things. So we have a generalized term here. Incarceration means you've been put in one of these places, held in one of these places as a punishment. So an incarcerated person, if you help them remove a tattoo that represents a past version of themselves, right, then you remove some of the stigma they face in everyday life. What is stigma?
The negative association, a strong feeling in society that being in a particular situation is something to be ashamed of. So it helps remove some of the social shame they face in everyday life.
Yeah. In some ways, it's a little bit akin to the word stereotype, where it's like a perception people have about other people.
Sure.
And then the stigma would be a little more of like how they act out that perception.
And it's always negative. There's we often say there's a stigma attached to X.
It basically means a thing is socially unacceptable.
That's right.
Right? So you help remove that social unacceptableness so they can move forward with their, you know, lives. Give them a second chance, a clean slate, if you will. The program has opened my eyes. This, I believe, is the person who runs the program, not our young doctor from the beginning. I think everyone should have an equal opportunity at a fresh start. So
there you go. That's a beautiful way to end this article. Fresh start. Everybody wants a fresh start, even each day. So I hope you've had a fresh start today.
Simon. Yeah, I'm getting tired. I could use a fresh start.
After lunch, a fresh start.
We'll do a fresh start tomorrow with our third newsworthy clip. How about that? Listeners, thank you so much for joining us. We hope you'll join us again tomorrow for our third newsworthy clip. Until then, I'm Simon.
I'm Rhonda.
Saying goodbye for now.
Goodbye.